Welcome to Clifton Health on Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And welcome. We are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey, that also services the township of Little Falls. Welcome.
Welcome. We are located just about 12 miles west of New York City.
And on today's episode of Clifton Health on Air, we have two amazing guests with us. We have Enrico Caruso from our Environmental Health Division and Nino Antilli, Senior REHS of the Environmental Health Division. Welcome.
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 Thank you.
And today we are going to talk about the summer season, and 4th of July is coming up, so we're going to talk about barbecues and cooking and anything that happens related to food and, unfortunately, foodborne illnesses and foodborne prevention. So the CDC states that foodborne illnesses tend to increase during the summer months because bacteria multiplies faster when it's warmer, and people also cook outside away from refrigerators, thermometers, and sinks more often. So you too. How can we reduce the risk of foodborne illnesses in the summer?
Okay, well, the first thing we can do is educate the public, right?
Awesome.
So that's why we're here, right?
Yeah.
So yes. We could talk about cooking temperatures when it comes to certain proteins. We can talk about what temperatures to keep food at, whether it's hot or cold. We can talk about hand wash, and we can talk about a variety of things.
Okay.
We could also even talk about some fruit salads that can get people sick that most people don't realize.
Oh, wow.
So there's a bunch of things we can talk about today.
All right. So what are some four top ways to reduce the risk of foodborne illnesses?
I guess
we can start with the first one.
Okay. So really, you know, everybody, a lot of people use hand sanitizer, right? So hand sanitizer is really not a substitution for hand washing. So really, you should be really washing your hands correctly first, and then after that is when you should apply a hand sanitizer. So if you're talking about proper hand washing, you're talking about a process that should, from start to finish, be at least 20 seconds with 10 to 15 seconds of vigorous hand scrubbing. Then after that, you can apply your hand sanitizer. So we don't want to see anybody substitute hand washing with hand sanitizer.
Okay. Now, soap and water.
Yeah,
what happens if I'm out in, like, on the beach?
Oh, if you're out on the beach,
just use those.
Yeah, you can use regular water. I mean, it's like temporary events that we inspect. Sometimes they'll bring their own water coolers, and they'll use the water from those. So it's not an issue. The key is the soap, the friction, and so on. So water coolers are fine.
Okay, perfect. All right. Let's talk about, so some people like to do outdoor activities and picnics at some parks.
Mm-hmm.
Are those commercial, like grills at parks and beaches, safe to use? How would we?
Well, they are, as long as you're doing the right thing with them, right? So you have to remember, people are on there cooking before you. So anytime you use those, I would probably say you probably want to get the grill hot first and give it a nice cleaning, whether you scrub it down or so on. But you have to remember, if you are going to scrub that down with a wire brush, that can pose a physical contamination. So you have to make sure that after you clean it, that you really check the grill, that there's no physical contamination on it, and then you can proceed with using it after that.
And not just for, like, commercial or communal grills, like a grill at home.
Same thing. I mean, you know, probably the number one type of physical contamination today would be the metal or the wire from the wire brushes. So even at home on your grill, start it up, get it hot, get it going, scrape it off, clean it very well. But you want to make sure you check the grill to make sure you don't have any physical contamination on it prior to putting the food down on it.
Is there a specific temperature you have to get your grill?
Not really. I mean, like, the grills are going to get hot regardless.
Okay.
I mean, if you're using a charcoal grill or a gas grill, you're going to want to get it hot anyway prior to cooking. So we don't look for a certain temperature that the grill's at.
Okay.
So.
And so we'll move on to the good stuff, the meats, the food
sure.
Came from the grocery store.
So, all right. So let's talk about what people usually barbecue, right? What are we talking about? We're talking about burgers are a big thing, right?
Burgers, chicken wings,
sausage, steaks, which is ground pork or ground beef. Mm-hmm. So really, you have to be educated in what the temperatures are, the finishing temperatures of those products, right? So let's talk about poultry, right? So that's defined as chicken, turkey, or duck, right? Most people are not cooking duck on a grill, but if you were, you'd want to cook all those to at least 165, to a minimum of 165 for 15 seconds. Whether they're whole or ground or stuff, anytime it's poultry, it's 165. At least 165 for a minimum of 15 seconds, okay? So what would that be? Turkey burger, turkey breast, right? Chicken sausage, turkey sausage, any of those contains poultry. And the reason why we want to cook those to at least 165 is because of the bacteria that's usually associated with them, which is what? Salmonella. Mm. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people at home don't know what the proper cooking temperatures of the foods, of the proteins are. So today, hopefully through this podcast, we can clarify that for everybody. So there's no outbreaks. That's the goal, right?
That is the goal.
That is the goal.
All right, so we covered poultry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about ground meats, right? Beef. So everybody think ground meat is just ground beef, but it's not. It can be ground beef. It could be ground veal. It can be ground pork. It could also be ground fish, right? You can get salmon burgers and cook those, right? So anything that's a ground meat, like the ones I just spoke about, you want to cook those to at least 155 for 15 seconds. And that's because the bacteria that's usually associated with that is E. coli. These are all internal temperatures. And anytime that you're going to check the temperature of food, you want to place your thermometer into the center of the thickest part of that product.
So I'm just new at cooking or new at grilling.
Okay.
I don't have a thermometer.
Oh, well, you got to go.
That's the first step
to buy a thermometer. One. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you definitely want to go buy a thermometer. Preferably one that's a thin probe thermometer because all the things that we're talking about are what we call thin masses of meat.
Mm.
So there are a lot of thin probe thermometers that are out there. Actually, they even sell them at supermarkets today.
Okay.
So you go and you get yourself a nice thin probe thermometer.
So that's definitely like an essential
Because
grill.
What other way are you going to know whether it's cooked or not without checking it internally?
And these are all internal.
These are all internal temperatures. And like I said, you always want to go into the center of the thickest part of the product that you're temping.
Okay.
Let's talk about steaks and
like the thick cut meats.
So if you're talking about whole cuts of meat, right? Like your steaks, your ribeyes, which I love ribeyes, by the way.
Those
York
are
strips,
good.
Yeah, those are very good. even your fish fillets, right? Salmon fillets, swordfish fillets. You want to make sure those are all cooked to 145. So an internal temperature of 145 for 15 seconds. And again, you would use your thin probe thermometer and you would go into the center of the thickest part of that product. As long as those cooking temperatures being met, you know, that's half the battle right there as far as, you know, when you're cooking food to the right temperature, you're trying to reduce the pathogens to a safe level so you don't get sick when you eat it.
I'm not sure if we touched upon it, but like a hot dog or a sausage, Italian sausages are big.
The sausages, I mentioned those, that would be ground meat. So whether it's ground beef or a ground pork sausage or, you know, well, you know, we did say there are chicken sausages. So again, that always gets cooked to 165. So again, anytime it's got poultry, it's 165. If you're looking at a pork sausage or a beef sausage, it would be 155.
155.
Or above.
Okay.
Hot dogs, I mean, they're kind of pre-cooked anyway, so you're just kind of throwing those on the grill and
watching them burn.
Watching them burn and split open. And then you can eat them.
Watching
you know?
The juices flow
exactly. Yep. I would say that's probably the least of our concern are the hot dogs.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I never knew
already,
that.
They're already cured and cooked already.
Okay. And then there's a slight little stigma or a question.
Sure.
I accidentally dropped my burger bun on the floor.
Oh.
And 5-second rule.
Wow.
I picked it up.
Well, think about it, right? I mean,
is that a real thing?
I'd say throw it out. I mean, if you're home and you're, let's say you're at a park and you're grilling and you drop it on the grass or something. I mean, you know, the park is used for many things, is it not? So even at home, I mean, I would say, you know, they always talk about the 2 second or the 5 second rule. For me, if we were inspecting an establishment, right, and we saw something hit the floor, we would say what?
Throw it out.
So, you know, we live by the saying, when in doubt, throw it out. So I would throw that out. I wouldn't keep it.
Okay, perfect. So after cleaning, what's the next step in order to prepare for the grilling process?
So you need utensils, right? Okay. So usually you have like something maybe like a spatula to flip the burgers, or you're going to use tongs to flip stuff. So what you want to remember too is not only can you get people sick by not cooking the proteins to the correct temperature, which we just talked about, if you're cross-contaminating, you could also get people sick.
So you definitely need like different tongs and different spatulas for different
or like two
items.
Different sets.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, you're not going to want to take tongs that have just touched raw poultry and then with those same tongs go touch a hot dog that you're going to give to a young kid. You know, that would be cross contamination, right? So it would be wise or prudent to have multiple sets of tongs for certain things, maybe for raw product and then for finished product. If you wanted to spend the extra money, they do sell these color coded tongs that you can use. So they have yellow ones that are for poultry, red that's for beef. So it all depends on what you want to do.
They also have that for like cooking. They have cutting boards like that, right?
Exactly. So maybe when you go and you buy your thin probe thermometer, you can get yourself a pair of color-coded tongs and
there
cutting
you go.
Boards.
Yeah. Color-coded tongs, it's a good idea. Cutting boards.
Yeah. I'll add that to my shopping list.
Oh, I'm definitely adding that to my Amazon cart right now. Oh.
Absolutely.
Right?
Buy me some too.
Now, is there a proper way to store, like, raw meat? I know, like, some people like to prepare for big parties in advance. How would you store the raw meat?
All right. So, you know, so it's funny because, you know, I teach a lot of food safety management classes. And today, it's like the things that we talk about in restaurants, nobody really does at home, right? Mm-hmm. So, really, most people today get sick at home. Right, because they don't follow the same guidelines or rules that are put in place for food establishments. So proper storage of food or raw proteins will go according to their cooking temperatures. So we touched on the cooking temperature. So let's start with poultry, right? That's got the highest cooking temperature, so it's 165. So you're always going to want to take raw poultry and store it on the bottom shelf of a refrigerator.
Okay.
Then what you do is you store what gets cooked to 155 above that. So that would be your ground beef, right, or your ground meats. Then what would go above that would be your whole cuts of meat, right? So if you're storing them according to their cooking temperatures, you prevent what? Cross-contamination, right?
Oh, wow.
So, for instance, let's say we made a little mistake there and we took raw poultry and we stored it above raw ground beef. And through the night, that poultry contaminated that ground beef. Dripped onto it, whatever it may be, right? You're going to go make your burgers, and you're going to cook them to what? 155.
Oh, wow.
Right?
And it's not going to...
But they've been contaminated with possibly, what, salmonella that gets destroyed at a higher temperature. So then you get, you know, people get sick. So you always want to store your food correctly, and you want to store it according to the cooking temperatures.
Well, thank you for that. I actually did not know that.
There you go.
That was an interesting tip.
I'm sure nobody does that at home, you know, so.
Definitely not.
Half the time, right?
Can we just talk about some frozen items?
Sure.
Let's touch upon, what's the correct way to defrost properly?
Proper way to defrost. Mm-hmm. All right, so there's four ways you could properly defrost frozen food, right? So one is you can defrost it under refrigeration at 41 degrees Fahrenheit or below. So, for instance, you're having that big barbecue on Saturday, and you got some frozen ground beef. Maybe put that frozen ground beef in the refrigerator on Friday morning. And it sits there for 24 hours underneath refrigeration, and it thaws out, right? So now the next day, it's all thawed, and you're ready to go. Another way you can do it is you can actually run it underneath potable water at 70 degrees or below, and that'll help thaw it out, okay? So let's say it's frozen ground beef, and it's vacuum-packed. You keep it in that package, you put it in a strainer, and just let cold water run on it. The key is potable water. Running potable water is the key. Most people make the mistake by just taking that product and letting it sit in standing water. That's, you don't want to do that. Or they use hot water, which you don't want to do either, because now you're starting to cook it. So you want to keep that. You want to make sure that water is, that water is 70 degrees or below. So that's a second way. Okay. A third way is you can use your microwave to defrost, right?
Really?
There's the defrost settings on the microwave. But what you have to remember is if you're going to defrost that product in the microwave, as soon as it's done defrosting, you have to cook it immediately.
Mm-hmm. So you sometimes can't leave it out there.
Nope. Some people make the mistake. They defrost in the microwave and then they put it in the refrigerator. You can't do that. As soon as it's done defrosting, you cook it, right?
Okay.
The fourth way and the last way you can do it is simple. You can take that frozen item and cook it. And as it cooks, it does what? It defrosts.
So straight out the freezer.
Right? You can take frozen burgers. You can take frozen chicken. And you can throw it on the grill.
Hmm.
And as it's frozen, it cooks. And as it cooks, it starts to defrost and cook. And again, what do? You make sure that your final cooking temperatures are met. So those are the four ways that you can properly defrost your food. What you don't want to do is what a lot of people do is what? They take it, they throw it on the counter in the morning, and they let it sit and defrost all day long. At what? Room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially what we call the danger zone, right? So, like, if you were going to talk about temperatures real quick, which I'm sure we'll get into later, but...
All
cold food should really be held at 41 or below. And all hot food should be held at, what, 135 and above. So anything in between those two temperatures is what we call the danger zone. And that's where bacteria like to grow.
The danger zone.
And then there's the super danger zone.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, there's another one.
Which they really like to grow. And that's 70 to 125. So think about it. Room temperature is, what, 76 degrees, right? So now that food is sitting where? At the worst temperature that it could possibly sit at.
Wow.
You know?
Mm-mm-mm.
So there you go. We killed two birds with one stone there. See that?
Killed all of my myths. Like, yeah. I am definitely going to do more summer safe handling for sure.
Sure. So that's for, you know, that's proper defrosting. We touched a little bit on what, you know, holding temperatures, which we'll get into in a little bit. We can get into that a little bit more. What else would you like to talk about? You tell me.
I'm still kind of upset about about a few things.
I'm sure.
I thought the defrost button on the microwave was like the popcorn button.
No.
Where you don't touch it because it's actually not going to do it's supposed to do.
Yeah, take a look at it. Like, some microwaves will tell you what protein you're using, and then you kind of put the weight in, and then it sets the time for you, and it defrosts it.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know that button existed. See?
Well, isn't that why we're here today?
Yeah.
Right? So everybody's going to learn something today, right? So
learn a lot today.
Yeah.
Learn a lot today. But, all right. So we talked about...
Defrosting, right?
Defrosting.
We talked about if we can cook just frozen food, right? Which we did, right?
And we kind of talked about what the proper temperatures all raw foods are to be cooked and... But did we talk about reheating?
We didn't talk about that.
Because leftovers, I love me a good leftover.
Yeah, so, I mean.
I guess we're going to debunk this myth right now. So
you
want to
talk
about
you want to talk about reheating leftovers, right?
Yes.
So, like, give me an example of something that you're talking about reheating, and maybe I can help you out a little bit better.
Pork.
Like what, a pork chop or something like that?
Yeah, like a grilled pork chop.
Okay.
Like a grilled
pork
chop.
Would we put it back on the grill?
I'm talking about like a roasted pig.
Oh, you're talking about a full-blown pig roast? Well,
let's not talk about that. I don't actually eat it, but don't go down that road. It happens.
Well, there'd be no pig left if there was a pig roast, so we wouldn't have to worry about it.
Poor pig.
Pig roasts are fun. It depends, you know, so let's talk about why we have... people that get sick at barbecues or in general, right?
Yeah,
so,
that's why we're, yeah,
right?
That's why
so
we're here.
Hot days, right? We just went through heat wave around here, right? 90-something degrees for, what, 2 weeks straight, roughly, right? So once you cook the food, right, you got picnic tables. What are you going to do with the food, right? So either you want to keep the food at 41 or below, right, or keep it at 135 and above. Now, does that happen at barbecues? Usually not, right? Because people usually take the food, put it on a platter, and throw it on a table somewhere.
Mm.
And it's baking in the sun, right? That's the issue, right? So generally, that's what we call, you know, the term we use in our industry is time is a public health control, right? So that means you're going to keep food out, but not use anything like ice or Sternos, right? Let's say we had potato salad or macaroni salad or tuna salad. We made a tray of it, right? And we packed that on ice, and it sat outside. And it stayed at 41 or below. That's fine. That product can sit out because as long as it's, what, 41 or below, right? So some of these backyard barbecues or just barbecues in general, people have ice that they bring and they can keep the food cold. But what do we do when we can't keep the food cold, right? What the code says, and you know, or I should say FDA, is if you're going to keep food out, let's say cold food. So let's say we take a tray of tuna out of the fridge, right, that we made. It's at 41 degrees, and I put it on this picnic table, right? Mm-hmm. It can stay out there for 6 hours.
Wow.
As long as it doesn't hit 70 degrees. So whatever comes first.
Okay.
70 or 6 hours. So that means if that product hits 70 degrees in the first hour, it should be discarded at that point. Now, does that usually happen? Never.
So it would be considered dangerous. That'd be in the danger zone to eat.
It would be considered enough bacteria has probably grown in it that it's going to get you sick. Now, if it stays below 70 degrees, it can sit out there for 6 hours. So let's say we put that tuna salad out at 1 p.m. and it never hits 70 degrees. That means you can discard it at what? 7 p.m. if it doesn't sell. I mean, at a restaurant. If you don't eat it, right? Mm-hmm. But if it hits 70 degrees, at that point is when it should be discarded. Okay. Hot food's a little different.
Okay. Yeah. So how long can hot food
be? Hot food can sit out for 4 hours, no matter what the temperature is. Again, this is not using, this is not us keeping it hot with anything. This is just using time. Just you putting it on a table and that's it. So our burgers, right? Our sausages, right? Our pork chops, right? You know, whatever we're cooking, our fish, our shrimp. Once you're done cooking it to the proper temperature and you put it out, if it doesn't get eaten within 4 hours, you should do what? You should discard that product. That never happens.
No.
And that's probably why people get sick, right? Because it's sitting there for so long in the, what, danger zone. And at that point, it's just, what, growing bacteria the entire time.
Wow.
Bacteria that you're going to ingest, right? So, but again, if you're able to control the temperature and keep that tuna salad at 41 or below, or all that hot food that we just cooked at 135 and above, it can sit out there all day. Maybe it'll dry out, but who cares?
It'll be safe to eat.
It'll be safe to eat, though.
So, well, let's add ice packs to our shopping cart.
Yeah, sure.
And I guess Sternos.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know what they sell that's pretty cool? I remember going to a barbecue once, and they had like this, it looked like a little inflatable pool that went on the table.
Oh, yeah.
Big, I thought that rectangular, was like little.
Yes. Those are popular now.
And you just pack all the ice in that, and you put all the food in there. Yeah. And it's real big, and it's rectangular. Oh. So you can get a lot of product in there. So
Amazon
that's what you
cart.
Want.
That's it.
All right. So you got color coding cutting boards. You got to buy thin probes.
Thin
and you got to buy our
the
little
tongs that are color coded.
Yeah.
The Sternos.
And our tabletop, what? Pool.
And the tabletop there pool for the potato salad.
Yes.
Salad.
There you go.
Vegetables.
Yes. So that's what you want to do with the food. Enrico wants to chime in a little bit over here. Come on, Enrico. Tell him what you're saying.
So I was just mentioning when Nina was talking about how to put the food on the ice, you want to make sure that you're fully submerging it under ice. So now when you have a bowl of potato salad, you can't just put that entirely under ice. So you want to just put it out in small batches so that it stays cold. Because if you're just putting a big bowl there for the 6 hours, the top is always going to be warmer than what the bottom is going to be. And if you start mixing that, now you're introducing the bacteria from the top to the bottom. Now you're going to get somebody sick that way. So it's always a good idea, small batches, and constantly changing the ice, refilling your ice, and just putting out a new batch so that this way people are not eating the food on top that might be at 70 degrees. The bottom might be 41 because that's closer to the ice. So it's always a good idea mixing it so that it's always staying cold or smaller batches.
Definitely going to take that into account because
it's important, right?
It is very important, and it's something that we don't think about usually because, we're only did everything get cooked, yeah, basically, and like, are we feeding the family?
Yeah,
and that leads us into our next question. So we did talk about what are some concerns about leaving all types of food unprotected. Examples like not covering it with wraps or proper utensils are not being cleaned properly. Just like, what are some concerns that you guys have?
Do you like when flies land on your food?
Well, absolutely.
That's one reason why to cover it, right? And then what? Just to prevent, you know, any type of physical contamination, right? You're outside, anything that can land on that, if it's not covered, well, what? Contaminate it, right?
Yeah.
So that's why you probably, you know, is the best reason why to cover your food, right? To prevent any sort of physical contamination on that product.
I know we've talked about this and about reheating leftovers.
Sure.
What should we do with leftovers? How should it should be stored? If my guests are like, don't take the leftovers, should I just force leftovers upon people?
Well, let's put into account that we did everything right mm-hmm. to begin with, right? And that product is safe now to be given for leftovers, right? So what you can do is, let's go back to this, not using thyme as a public health control, but rather us using ice and Sternos, right? And all that product is kept hot and all of it's kept cold. When it's all done, you get it, you wrap it up, right? Maybe put it back in the fridge before your guests take it and go home. Or just wrap it up, and when they're leaving, give it to them, and mm-hmm. they go home with it. And hopefully they do the right thing when they go home, you know? Mm. That's the risk with leftovers sometimes, right? So, you know, you don't see it so much in the industry anymore that, you know, catering halls and so on are given leftovers, because what happens is if the person's not educated, they might take that food and throw it in the trunk of their car, right?
Oh.
On a, 96 yeah. degree day. And I would assume it's a lot hotter in that trunk than 96 degrees. And then that product sits there for hours? Mm. And we already said if it hits 70 degrees, it should go where? In the garbage, right?
Yeah.
And then they go home and they, you know what? Let me go grab the leftovers that I left in a car that's been sitting there for 4 or 5 hours. And then they eat it, and then what happens?
They get sick.
They get sick. So you just want to be educated enough to know whether it's safe to give them the leftovers, and if it is, wrap it up, take care of it, you know, and give it to them and have them go home with it. So that's how I would treat leftovers. But hopefully you're having a pretty good party where there are no leftovers.
That's
right?
True. That's so, absolutely right.
You know?
All right.
So that would be the rule on leftovers.
Perfect.
Okay.
Any final takes or recaps?
Yeah.
Any questions?
Well, two things I'll talk about real quick. Let's talk about the potentially hazardous salads, right?
Yeah.
The tuna salad, the macaroni salad, the potato salad, and so on, right? So what I would recommend is that if you're going to make something like that, maybe you make it the night before, or you pre-refrigerate your ingredients. Right, so if you take that product and you make it from a can of tuna that you just opened or a can of mayo that you just opened, you have to get that down to a certain temperature within 4 hours. So why even deal with the headache, right?
Mm.
Take all that stuff, put it in the refrigerator the night before, kind of like you're defrosting the night before, right? So the next day when you use it, it's already, 41 degrees. So when you mix that all up, half the battle's done. It's already being held at the right temperature.
So speaking of potato salad, is it the mayonnaise that makes it bad?
No, it's all the other stuff that you add in there, you know? So it could be the eggs, the potatoes themselves, pasta, right? If you look at all the major foodborne outbreaks we've had in years, it's been, produce? That's another issue today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So could mayo play a role? Possibly, but it's more of the products that are in it. Right, especially like the potatoes. And like I said, a lot of people make potato salad with eggs, or they put macaroni in there.
Or deviled eggs.
Yeah, deviled eggs, which are pretty good. But those are all considered potentially hazardous. So if you're not doing the right thing with them temperature-wise, you're going to get somebody sick.
Wow.
And let's talk about fruit salads.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
That's
let's not forget our desserts. About our fruit salads.
Yeah, I mean, watermelon's always fun, right? And cantaloupe.
But it's always sitting there.
And honeydew, right? Those are great fruits to have at a barbecue, right? What most people don't realize is that once you cut those, you have to maintain them at 41 or below, like a raw piece of poultry. There have been salmonella outbreaks associated with melons. So again, I would go back to what I just said about making potentially hazardous salads. I'd make sure that A, you clean the rind of those or the outside of them very well. And then when you're done doing that, refrigerate them. Even though you didn't cut them yet, even if they're whole, keep them in the refrigerator. So once you go and you prepare your salad the next day, they're ready, what, 41 degrees Fahrenheit or below. Let's maintain it at that temperature when we serve it. If not, then we can go back to the other rule that it's 6 hours as long as it doesn't hit 70 degrees. And that's the way that you can control getting anybody sick from melons. So as yummy as they are and as innocent you think melons may be, they can get you very sick.
Wow.
So just like Nina was saying about the fruit, anything that grows in the ground, your celery, potatoes, onions, garlic, that's all potential. Once you start cutting the outside of it and you get that knife through the top into the middle of the fruit, you're bringing all that bacteria on the outside to the inside. So to Nino's point, that's why you always have to make sure you're either cooking it, keeping it cold, or, you know, handling it correctly, washing it and before use, so that anything you're introducing into that salad is free of the bacteria and it doesn't have a chance to grow.
Awesome. Thank you. But let's recap. First of all, let's recap my Amazon cart.
Okay.
That is going to be color-coded tongs, mm-hmm. color-coded cutting boards.
Thin probe,
Thin probe thermometer. Now, a thin probe thermometer for each item, each poultry item?
I'm glad you mentioned that. So, yeah, I mean, you can cross-contaminate with a thermometer if you don't do the right thing, right? So one thermometer is fine, but if you're going to go into a piece of poultry with it, right, and let's say it's not cooked and you take that out, you don't want to just go put that into another product without sanitizing it. So what you can use are alcohol prep pads, same ones that you purchase.
Add those in the cart.
Yeah, we have a ton of them here, right?
Adding that to the cart.
Yeah, so those are perfect, right? The same ones that doctors use on you when you get a shot, right? You can use that to just clean the tip of the, sanitize the tip of the thermometer, and then you can go into another product with it. So that was a good point that you brought up.
All right. So I have my thermometer, my thin probe thermometer.
And now you have alcohol prep pads you got to add to the list, right?
Alcohol prep pads. And
a little pool
for the ice.
Yes.
And some ice packs,
definitely
for the outside.
Some music, need a radio. Right?
music. I think I got that.
Maybe a cooler too.
For sure. And then
maybe
the cooler.
Yeah, cooler.
So I did want to talk about packing and transporting to our fun locations. So like pools, lakes, water parks, splash parks, beaches. Yes. How can you properly transport the food out?
Okay, well, you know, you want to try to avoid cross-contaminating when you're in the cooler. And the way you do that is by keeping certain proteins away from each other, right? And obviously, if the product is going cold, you got to maintain it at, what, 41 or below? So you want to pack it with ice, right?
Okay.
So cooler with a lot of ice.
Cooler with a lot of ice.
And don't contaminate. You know, don't maybe have one where you're just keeping poultry in if you're going to bring poultry. And then another one with just the ground meats, okay? Because you really don't want to put poultry in something with ground meat, right? Because what happens if it starts to contaminate? Then you're in trouble.
Getting somebody sick, yeah.
So separate coolers will help you out.
All right. Adding that to the cart for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
And then... if I want some safety tips regarding proper food handling and food safety.
Uh-huh. You can call Enrico Caruso at the Clifton Health Department.
Definitely our health department.
So you can reach out to your local health departments, right? You could also maybe take a look at the USDA website, maybe the FDA website. They probably have some good information there. CDC, right? But I would say your local health department might be the best place to start. So there you go.
And we'll put all the links in the description of this podcast as well.
Absolutely. Both of you, thank you so much. Any final words of wisdom?
Enjoy your summer, right? Enjoy the weather. Cook your food to the proper cooking temperatures, right? And hold your food at the proper cooking temperatures. And make sure you wash your hands. That would be my sign off.
And just to recap, poultry is at, cook it at 165.
165 or above for at least 15 seconds. Ground meats is 155 or above for 15 seconds. Then your whole cuts of meat are 145 or above for 15 seconds. And again, center into the thickest part is where you want to check the temperature of the product. Very important to know that.
Very important.
Remember, when you're cooking cut vegetables, you always want to get at least 135 on those. Because remember, like we were saying with the melons and everything else, once you cut them, you're introducing bacteria. And let's face it, most of the world does not wash their hands before they start touching stuff.
Don't tell me that.
When you start handling the raw food, you could do that, but you just got to make sure you get that proper temperature so that you're killing any bacteria that was introduced from our fellow hands.
Yeah, just to chime in on that, if you're going to cook, let's say, vegetables that are going to be hot held on a sterno, you want to at least cook those to 135 or above, right? Because then you want to maintain them at that temperature. The problem is when you look at all the outbreaks associated with produce, one mainly being E. coli, which we know that after today, we know that anything with ground meats you want to cook to 155 or above, that's the problem you come with produce. If you're sauteing spinach, how do you really know you're getting it to 155? You don't, right? You can't really check the temperature of that, right? So that's where the issue lies with produce, unfortunately, you know? Because you're either eating it raw or you're eating it at a temperature that you're not cooking it high enough because you just can't tell. You're sauteing it.
Oh, lovely.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Maybe let's add in our cart gloves, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Just in case.
Wash
when
your hands.
When you go to backyard barbecues, there's barehanding all over the food.
Should we get into barehanding? Let's not barehand.
Yeah, we don't want to barehand ready to eat food. So it's not necessarily gloves, but gloves are a good thing. So you can use gloves, tissue paper, tongs, whatever it may be. Just try to avoid barehanding ready to eat food.
Awesome.
Okay.
Right, I feel like we can sit here and chat all day. You guys are awesome.
I had fun hanging out with you guys.
Thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And like Lauren said, we will put all the resources down in the description of the podcast. And have a wonderful summer. Thank you both for joining us on Clifton Health on Air.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Lauren, take us out.
Tune in to our podcast every other Monday for a new episode. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. You can visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. You can follow us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?